Good morning. It's 7:08 and you're listening to Upfront. I'm Janine Etter. And this morning we continue with our impeachment watch series. On Thursday, the House approved H.R. 660 to formalize the impeachment inquiry on a vote of 232 to 196. All Republicans voted against the measure, and two Democrats joined them in voting no, Colin Peterson of Minnesota and Jeff Vandrew of New Jersey, while independent Justin Amash, a former Republican, joined the Democrats in voting yes. Now there will be open hearings and subpoena power for Republicans on key committees and potentially a vote by the full House on impeachment. For more, we're joined by Mitch Jezerich, host of Letters and Politics. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning, Janine Etter.
How are you today?
I'm good. I got 8 hours sleep, which might be the first time since I've been here. So I am ready to go.
Oh, congratulations. And we appreciate all of your hard work there in Washington. So tell us about what happened Thursday. I'm particularly interested in these two Democrats, Colin Peterson and Jeff Vandrew, who voted with the Republicans. What do we know about them?
Well, they are not two Democrats that get a lot of attention. So I'm assuming a lot of people, this is the first time that they are hearing about them. Vandrew, who you've mentioned, from New Jersey, from a very conservative area in New Jersey, southern New Jersey, and he has been opposed to the impeachment process right from the get-go. He has been saying we shouldn't be focusing on impeachment. Instead, we should be focusing on prescription drugs. We should be, you know, focusing on other things rather than impeachment. So he has never been supportive, even though he's a Democrat, never been supportive of impeachment. And so his vote came as no surprise. For him, as well as the other lawmaker from Minnesota, they are from districts that Donald Trump won in 2016. And I think that's the simple issue of why. Well, maybe that the guy from New Jersey, you know, sincerely believes there shouldn't be an impeachment. But, you know, for Democrats, the reason the Democrats have a majority in the House of Representatives right now is because they won some seats in which you had Republicans in before. That's how you determine, you know, those seats where, you know, it's not like the Bay Area where all of our representatives are Democrats and they're going to be Democrats regardless of who it is, at least more than likely. You know, these are areas that, you know, are much more conservative and frequently do vote in Republicans as their representatives. It happened to be with what we saw happen in 2018 and sort of a blue wave, at least with the election in the House of Representatives, well, the Democrats took some of those seats, and these are a couple of those seats. And so, you know, they're worried. They're going to be up for re-election next year. It's a presidential election, so we can anticipate a really high turnout. You can anticipate Donald Trump supporters to really turn out next year, since they'll be voting whether or not, you know, since we think they'll be voting, we'll have to see what happens with impeachment. But, you know, very likely they will be voting for Donald Trump. So that's going to increase their turnout in these districts that Trump won before in 2016. So I think these are two Democrats who are, you know, politically calculating their chances of winning the next their next race next year. And so came to the determination, let's not give the opponents, whoever the Republican opponents will be, let's not give them some extra ammunition to fire at them as they try to guard their seats. I do think what's also significant, though, Janine, is that these aren't the only two Democrats that have won their seats in either swing districts or districts that had Republicans in before or districts that went for Trump in 2016. I think actually more interesting, because there's almost 30 members where that's the case. They won seats where Donald Trump won their districts in 2016. So the fact that only two of them did it, I think, is pretty remarkable. In fact, I think I would have went into yesterday's vote maybe anticipating a few more, maybe at least two more Democrats voting against the impeachment process. But that didn't happen. It was just these two guys from Minnesota and New Jersey.
But there was complete solidarity on the Republican side, not one defector. So, yeah.
And I think this is more significant than the actual two Democrats who crossed the aisle and voted against these procedures for an impeachment inquiry in the process. And the reason why is because everything that we have learned so far concerning Donald Trump with this situation in Ukraine, and we've not heard very many Republicans defend Donald Trump with the actual action that he did, saying that if you want this military aid, that if you want a White House meeting between Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky, you will have to do these investigations, both into the Bidens, and then if Ukraine played a role in the theft of the DNC emails in 2016. So despite all the damaging deposition testimony that has occurred so far, despite the fact that very few Republicans are willing to defend Donald Trump and what he actually did, despite everything we know so far, which has seemed damning, especially before al-Baghdadi, the Islamic State leader, was blew himself up. Before that moment, a lot of Republicans were growing frustrated with the president over his strategy in northern Syria and withdrawing troops from there. And it just seemed to be this real avalanche of discontent towards the president here in Washington, D.C. So despite all of that, there was still no Republicans who were willing to support the procedures that they've been demanding and to have finally a vote in the House floor that they have been demanding. There's still no Republicans in the House of Representatives right now willing to say, yeah, we should move forward with this. And I think that's pretty significant. That suggests to me that they need the that there needs to be more bombshell information coming out concerning this situation, concerning Donald Trump, in order to get Republicans starting to defect from this party line, absolute defend, opposition to impeachment happening. Now, that could happen because so far, everything that has happened in the impeachment inquiry has been behind closed doors. Hmm. And there's been leaks and newspapers have gotten a hold of the opening statements from many people who've come to give their depositions. We don't know how they got those. Was it Democrats who gave it to them? Was it the people who are giving the testimony that gave them the opening statement? We don't know. They won't tell us, and they shouldn't tell us, because that's how you protect your sources. But so everything so far has been behind closed doors. Well, in the next couple of weeks, Janine, we anticipate the House Intelligence Committee to come up with open hearings, hearings that we're going to be able to watch. And I think for the most, even Adam Schiff actually announced last night, and he is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee leading this investigation. He said last night that his committee may begin releasing the transcripts from the depositions that have occurred as early next week. So as more information becomes public and this becomes a public process, maybe some of these witnesses who have already given their depositions come back and give public testimony. Perhaps it just is damning and really hits the public hard. It is possible. I could still see a scenario in which Republicans would begin to defect, maybe just a few. I'm not saying everyone, and I'm not saying it's even likely. I'm just saying it's within the realm of possibility. But as far as things stand now, Janine, no Republicans in the House of Representatives are willing to even show they support a process of an impeachment inquiry.
And that's my point. Like, will bombshell testimonies even matter? Because it seems dead on arrival once it gets to the Senate, the Republican-controlled Senate.
Well, I think that's a fair point that you bring up. And, look, Donald Trump said he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it, right? So, You know, maybe it doesn't matter. But you still got to go through with the process and see if it matters or not. I mean, are you going to stop now because you think it's not going to matter later? If I think people who support an impeachment would argue, if we can't impeach this guy, who can we impeach? Right? I mean, what kind of precedent are you going to set up that if you can't hold this president accountable, and impeachment is the ultimate way in which the House of Representatives can hold a president accountable? If we can't do it with this guy, what does it mean for the future of what presidents can get away with in the future? I do think, Janine, this is a very important moment right now concerning the balance of power in the government. Over really since World War II on, maybe you can even make the argument from the Great Depression on, we have seen a dynamic in which the president has become more and more powerful. Back in the day, it used to be the Congress that held sort of the reins of power. But really, Franklin D. Roosevelt on, you start seeing a more powerful president evolve into what a lot of people today would call the imperial presidency, a president that could take you without getting authorization into war, like Harry Truman did, like George W. Bush has done, like every president has done ever since World War II, that the unitary power and that all the power in the government has gone towards the presidency. But of course, we have checks and balances. And according to the Constitution, we have three co-equal branches of government. They say Congress's strongest point in history was right after the impeachment of Andrew Johnson in 1868. And that at that moment, that weakened the presidency significantly. Now, Andrew Johnson was not removed from office in the Senate, but he basically became a caretaker president until the next election a year later, or at least when a president would come in a year later. And so, you know, there is this sort of battle of, is this an opportunity, actually? And maybe it won't happen, but it does present this opportunity for the Congress to maybe regain some of its power that is lost through the years.
And I wanted to go back to another point in terms of the Republican spin of the narrative that this is an unfair process. What procedural amendments did they want, and did they get any of them? Or how many did they get?
They got none. Zero. Okay. And they brought a bunch. I was there at the beginning. So this happens not yesterday, but on Wednesday evening. It's the House Rules Committee that came up with the bill that will set out the procedures in which the House will follow here on out in a public way with the impeachment inquiry. And so Republicans have some objections. They have a lot of objections. None of them supported it, right? So this whole process began in the House Rules Committee hearing Wednesday night, which was actually the first vote in Congress for this attempt of impeachment against Donald Trump. And it was the committee vote. That hearing started about 3 in the afternoon and didn't end until about midnight. And it was just one amendment after another that the Republicans were bringing to try to get passed. They all failed by party line vote. And some of the things that the Republicans wanted, well, one, they just wanted this to be an open process right now from the beginning. Right. That their argument is it's an impeachment. This shouldn't be happening behind closed doors. Democrats would argue this is the actual investigation that's happening right now, in which we're getting depositions. Depositions are always in private because you don't want witnesses to be able to hear what each other have said because they can conform their stories together. Right. This is just the investigative portion. We don't have a special prosecutor doing this. The Justice Department ignored the whistleblower's complaint when it came out concerning the call between Trump and Zelensky. So this is the investigation part, and that's always done behind closed doors. So that's what Democrats would say to that. Other things that Republicans don't like is the role that the White House will play in all of this. Now, it is similar once the House Intelligence Committee finishes its open hearings. We don't know how many open hearings it's going to have, and we don't know who's going to be summoned yet to testify. But it does say in the rules that it must have at least one public hearing. So we will get at least one public hearing when that happens. When that is done, then all the transcripts, the report that comes from the House Intelligence Committee, everything goes to the House Judiciary Committee, and it's the House Judiciary Committee that will determine and work on potential articles of impeachment. When it gets to the House Judiciary Committee, the White House will have some special privileges to participate in that process that occurs, including providing questions for witnesses. If there are witnesses who come testify, they will just be able to participate in that process, which is exactly what happened with Bill Clinton in 1998 when the Republicans impeached him. During the process, the White House also got to participate in the House Judiciary Committee. The Republicans' objection is that because there are six committees altogether working on the impeachment inquiry, not just the House Intelligence, but also Foreign Affairs, Ways and Means, Judiciary, obviously, the Financial Services Committee, that all these committees, the only committee work that the White House can participate in is the House Judiciary Committee's work. And so they're objecting to that. They say that the White House should be able to participate with all the committees. What the Democrats would say to that is, no, what the other committees are doing is, again, they're conducting the investigation. It's the Judiciary Committee that will deal with the actual issue of whether or not to impeach. So while these other committees are conducting their own investigation, you never have the suspect be a part of the investigative team, right? So that's what the Democrats, that's what they say to that.
So along with this House vote, what were the major highlights for you this week?
Well, I think the House vote was, for me, certainly the major highlight. Mm-hmm. It was only the second time in history that the floor of the House of Representatives voted to start an impeachment inquiry. Now, people will say, wait, I thought it was the third or even the fourth time. With Richard Nixon, the House floor actually did not vote, my understanding, on the impeachment proceedings. That all happened in the House Judiciary Committee. In the House Judiciary Committee. I take that back. It's actually the third time because the House did vote for the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, but I don't think they ever voted on a procedure, right? So in 1868, when they voted to impeach Andrew Johnson, they just went straight to impeaching him. There was no investigation needed. The radical Republicans were angry with Andrew Johnson because they were not enacting. Andrew Johnson was not enacting the radical Republicans' legislative plans to try to bring racial equality to the South after the Civil War. So that's why they moved to impeach him. There was no investigation. They just went straight to impeach him. So that would mean that it was only the second time that the House floor actually voted for impeachment proceedings. So it's historic, right? Even if it was the fourth time, it would still be historic because you're removing the president from office. I guess the other big thing that happened up here was another deposition given by an administration official, this being Alexander Vindman, mm-hmm. who is a lieutenant colonel who is on the National Security Council, who was the first person to actually testify, who had listened in to that phone call between Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky. And so I think that was significant. He expressed extreme concern about the contents of that conversation, that he was concerned about trying to force Ukraine to do these investigations in order to get the military aid and also to get a White House meeting between Trump and Zelensky. And I think what's significant is he went, after that phone call occurred, and this is what's been leaked from the testimony, after that phone call occurred, he went to White House attorney John Eisenberg to complain and to warn John Eisenberg about what happened. And according to Vindman, what Eisenberg did was then set in process taking whatever record they had from that phone call out of where they usually store on the servers, computer servers, where they usually store records from phone calls with other foreign leaders, and put it to a more secure server in which no one could get to, or which very few people, I should say, could actually get to. We heard about that in the whistleblower's complaint that started this whole process. And, you know, yesterday, Tim Morrison testified. It wasn't as damning on Donald Trump as some of the others, but he said he was worried. He said that he thought what the call, everything was up and up in the call, that there was nothing wrong with the call and what Donald Trump did. But he did express a concern about that record of the call getting out and being used in a political way. So after all that occurred this week, the House Intelligence Committee has asked John Eisenberg to come testify for next week. We'll see if he appears. He may not. We'll see what happens with court battles. And then the House also is requesting John Bolton to testify next week. John Bolton, not so sure he is going to show up to testify, but I guess he has expressed a willingness, or hinted at it anyways, of testifying in a public setting, which would be wildly interesting to see John Bolton testify, because John Bolton was the national security advisor. You don't get any closer to Donald Trump than that.
Well, we've been speaking with Mitch Jezerich, host of Pacifica Radio's Letters in Politics, for our daily Impeachment Watch segment. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
Enjoyed it, Janine. Talk to you later.
Okay.